and treat right. She blinks, her brows pulling together. Dude, of course, that's what I said. All right, well, I don't have time for this, or the fucking energy. I turn around and walk away, leaving her standing there. This time, mercifully, she has enough common sense to let me go.
8. Silver. Wrangling Max during the twins' lesson is easier than I anticipated. It costs me $5 and a Hot Pocket, but it's a price I'm willing to pay. When Dr. Coombs arrives to collect the boys, flustered and all over the place, I feel so bad for him that I offer him a cup of coffee and a chance to sit down for a second. It never occurs to me that he might accept, but when he looks at me, his eyes a little wild and distant, I realize that he probably hasn't simply sat down to drink a cup of coffee in a very long time. He's way older than Mom and Dad, somewhere in his mid-40s. Mom always used to take me to him to get my eyes tested when I was a kid. Everything about him is normal. He wears regular, smart clothes, his hair is a medium brown, and his eyes are a steady, reassuring blue. He was calm and always nice to me. And in return, I was always terrified of him. I hated going for eye exams. I hated having to put my chin on the metal stirrup. I hated having a light shone in my eyes until I could see the alien, weirdly textured back of my own retina. Most of all, I was afraid that I was going to fail, that Dr. Coombs was going to tell my mom those three awful words that would signal the end of my life as I knew it. She needs glasses. Sitting at the counter now, staring into his coffee, Dr. Coombs' presence no longer fills me with a deep sense of dread. I feel sorry for the guy. I shift awkwardly from one foot to the other. I'm so sorry about Mrs. Coombs. Have they said anything? Is she getting better? Dr. Coombs scans the kitchen as though he's misplaced something, but he can't quite remember what.
No. No, they haven't said anything. Just that she's stable. They're not really sure what's going on with her.
I don't know what to say to this. Outside, Max is showing Gregory and Lou the fort he made 2 summers ago. It's raining, the sky a roiling mass of gray, and it feels as though the weight of the heavy clouds overhead is pressing down on top of the house, and the walls are about to buckle under the strain. I'm sorry to hear that, Dr. Coombs. He waves me off with a flick of his wrist.
You can call me David now, Silver. You're what, 16?
17. He nods.
17. Okay, wow. Time seems to be speeding up every goddamn day.
Yeah, my Nona keeps warning me that it only gets quicker, too. She keeps on telling me,
appreciate your youth, Silver.
I imitate Nona's heavily accented, raspy voice.
Appreciate your figure. Appreciate your health. Forget that shit, Dr. Coombs says. The thing you really need to treasure, the only thing you should value above anything else at your age, is the complete and utter lack of responsibility. No mortgage, no bills, no taxes, no impossible decisions or people looking to you for comfort. Shit gets real, Silver, and it gets real fast. Nothing in here really changes.
He taps the side of his head.
You start finding gray hairs. You notice a few more lines on your face. Your back starts to ache when you sit down for too long. But everything else, the whole older and wiser line they spin you in high school, don't believe a fucking word of it. It doesn't matter how old any of us get. We're all still fumbling around in the dark, pretending like we know what the fuck is going on, what the fuck we're supposed to do. But when we climb into bed at night, we're still gripped by the same sense of panic we felt when we were teenagers. Believe me, we were all just making this shit up as we go along.
Well, that's one way to make a girl feel optimistic for the future. I take a sip of my own coffee, wanting to hide my entire face inside the mug.
God, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be such a downer. I'm so fucking tired.
He looks it, too. The large, puffy bags under his eyes have aged him at least 10 years. He lifts his head, watching his sons out of the kitchen window as they follow my brother into the copse of trees that marks the boundary of our yard and the beginning of the Walker Forest. Max's yellow rain jacket is easy enough to spot through the bare, spindly trunks of the trees. Gregory and Lou's matching green jackets are a little harder to see, though. I go to the back door and yell their names into the impending dusk. When I turn around, Dr. Coombs is on his feet, putting his own coat on. Out of nowhere, he pulls me into a quick, tight hug, and then releases me just as quickly.
Thank you for listening, Silver. It's nice to be heard for a couple of minutes.
The boys barrel into the kitchen, whooping, full of energy, tracking mud all over the tiles.
Oh, Jesus, I'm sorry. Where are your paper towels?
Dr. Coombs scans the kitchen counters, but I stop him before he can get carried away. It's fine, please. Get on the road before the rain worsens. I've got this. It's no problem. He sags with relief, as if I've just told him I've seen the future, and his wife is going to wake up happy and healthy next Tuesday, and his life is going to go back to normal really, really soon.
Thanks again, Silver. You're a good girl.
Absently, he places down three $20 bills on the kitchen table, and it feels as though he isn't paying for the guitar lesson I just gave to the twins. It's as though he's paying me for something else. The moment of peace and quiet I gave to him while I let him sit in the kitchen and stare into an untouched cup of coffee. Later, I sit with Max on the couch, watching Jeopardy, thankful that he's oblivious to most of the shit that's going on around him. He's small for his age, almost the shortest kid in his class. He's still obsessed with comics and loves animals. If Max could have a dog, his life would basically be fucking made. His hair is fine like Mom's, but dark like Dad's. There's something delicate about him. He isn't rough and tumble like other boys. I worry sometimes that something hard will happen to him one day, the same as something happened to me, but it won't galvanize him. It will break him instead, and I will have gone off to college and left him here alone with our absentee parents. Max wriggles his toes, digging his feet underneath my legs, something he's always done when his feet are cold.
Do you think Greg and Lou's mom's going to die? He asks.
He's still fixed on the television screen, still scooping melted ice cream onto his spoon and ladling it into his mouth, but I can feel that his attention is now on me. This question's obviously troubling him. I squeeze his calf, and he grumbles, jerking his leg away. Turns out physical reassurance from his big sister isn't cool anymore.
I don't know, Maxie. I don't think the doctors know either.
How can the doctors not know? They know everything.
I remember still believing that doctors were infallible, all-knowing, all-powerful beings that never put a foot wrong. It wasn't too long ago that I still believed that. If someone was sick and they went to the hospital, then they were sure to get fixed and be just fine afterward. It came as a shock to me to realize that just because it was a doctor's job to fix people didn't mean it was possible every single time. Sometimes there's nothing that can be done. Sometimes people just fucking die, and no matter how hard we object or fight or battle with that, it can't be changed. I don't want to be the person to tell Max any of that. Our parents brought Max into the world. They need to be the ones to break it to him that occasionally it's a cruel, hurtful, horrible, fucked up place, where sometimes moms get hit by cars, and they don't wake up from comas.
I don't know all the answers, Maxie, I murmur. Things are complicated sometimes. Would it make you feel better if I called Mom?
He blinks owlishly at the TV.
No, it's okay. It's just really sad for Greg and Lou. That's all.
I move his legs and scoot across the sofa, drawing him into my side. He doesn't shrug me off this time.
I know, bud. It is, isn't it?
9. Alex. The bar's heaving, packed to the rafters, the smell of damp lying heavy in the air. Every time a new customer walks in through the door, a good-natured roar goes up inside the rock. The patrons already parked at the bar and crowded around the pool tables, hurling a shower of peanut shells at the offenders guilty of letting the heat out. The jukebox has been cycling through Whitesnake and AC/DC all night, sporadically interrupted by the sounds of the Eagles and Creedence Clearwater Revival. Behind the altar, the name the rock's locals call the huge sticky slab of mahogany that forms the length of the bar, Angela and Maisie have been busting their asses for the last 6 hours, working their hardest to make sure everyone has a drink in front of them at all times. And me? I've been clearing tables, running food, watching the drunkest guys for any signs of hostility, and fielding the unwelcome advances of at least three middle-aged women who all seem intent on making me a man. This always happens when I'm working at the Rock. Women get it into their heads that, because I'm young, I'm still a retiring wallflower virgin who's never had his dick touched. Little do they know I could spend the night teasing them into fits of hysteria if I wanted to. They'd forget their own fucking names and lose all motor function if any of them could coax me to slide in between their bedsheets. They won't, though. Unlike other guys my age, I'm capable of maintaining focus once the subject of potential sex comes up. Besides, I don't shit where I eat. I have nothing against older women. Older women can be sexy as hell. But I like my job, and I like bringing in a paycheck, and I'm not dumb enough to risk any of that for one night getting my dick sucked. Hey, Alex. Alex, Montgomery's asking for you. Maya hollers across the bar. She's in the middle of pouring three different drinks, but she still somehow manages to hold up a black, corded handset to show me that the owner of the bar is waiting for me on the other end of the line. I spit out the toothpick I've been toying with between my teeth and vault over the altar, accepting the phone from her. Hey, man, what's up?
Got a girl out back. Wants to try out.
A gruff voice informs me.
She's young, probably too young. Get out there and clock her. Tell me if you know her face.
Montgomery runs with a club, a dangerous one. On the weekends, it amuses him to have girls strip for his buddies, and sometimes he calls on me to wait with the girls to make sure none of his boys get too handsy with them. Every once in a while, he has me head out back to see if I recognize them before he lets them out onto the bar floor to perform. Bad for business, he says, if a chick below the age of 18 shows up trying to earn herself a cool grand by artlessly taking her clothes off on a Wednesday night. Doesn't work out in anyone's favor, especially if the cops show up and shut the place down. It's happened before. Sure thing. I hang up the phone and head through the back, stepping over a pile of empty Corona boxes that have been tossed back here by the girls. Past the kitchen and then past Monty's office, I hurry down the corridor and boot the back emergency exit open, throwing my shoulder into the door when it sticks. In the alleyway behind the Rockwell, a startled girl with bright blonde hair nearly jumps out of her skin when the door swings back and hits the wall by the dumpsters. Her dark eyes shine brightly. She's wearing a coat with a fur trim around the collar and red PVC knee-high boots with a heel that could be used as a fucking prison shank. She nearly shits herself when she sees me. For once, I do recognize her. And I don't know what she's told Montgomery, but she is not 18. This girl is in my fucking biology class. Her name is... Fuck, it's right on the tip of my tongue. She pales when our eyes meet. Oh shit, it's you. Likewise. I turn to head back inside. Look, I can't lie to the boss. He wants to know if you're old enough to dance and you're not, so...
Please, wait. Alex, right? I need the money, okay? My mom's blown her entire paycheck at the casino again. We can't be late with the rent this month, or our asshole landlord's going to kick us out. I can...
Stop. You have to be 18. There's nothing I can do. Her eyes have grown round, bright with unshed tears. This is obviously not an act. I've borne witness to enough of those before to see this for what it is. Sheer desperation. I'm not unsympathetic to her situation. Far from it. I've been corralled into some seriously dark corners when I've been struggling to make ends meet, too. But lying to Monty is just something that I cannot, will not do. She looks like she's about to burst into tears. Look, I can take you in to see Monty. Maybe there's some other way for you to earn out tonight, but I'm going to be honest with him. You read me? Somehow I've conjured hope into her eyes with this suggestion. I immediately kick myself. Monty's hardly a bleeding heart. Definitely not one for sob stories. Still, this is all I can do for her, so it is what it is. She follows me into the building, unsteady in her stripper heels. I have to catch hold of her at one point to make sure she doesn't topple over. She shoots me a grateful smile, but not a single word has passed between us as I lead her back up the corridor toward Monty's office. I knock once and wait for him to call us in before I push the door open. Montgomery's office is not what you might expect. It's clean, for starters, while everything else at the Rockwell bears a patina of grease and sticky, spilled alcohol. On the wall, landscape paintings depict balmy summer scenes from Tuscany and Provence. Behind Monty's white marble desk, completely clear besides the computer screen and a single-framed photograph of Montgomery's dear departed mother, Babs, the man himself sits, wearing a bright red Christmas sweater with Rudolph emblazoned across the front of it.
"Sup, kid?"
Monty mutters. He's yet to look up at me from his computer screen. His bright hair is long, tied back into a ponytail with a leather thong. Angela always says he reminds her of Brad Pitt from Legends of the Fall. For a nearly 60-year-old guy, he's in pretty decent shape.
"Well?"
he asks. 17, senior at Raleigh, I tell him. Montgomery huffs. He finally looks up, his eyebrows forming one bushy line. He quickly glances at the girl beside me and sighs.
"What are you doing here, sweetheart? You're still a baby. This place ain't for you."
The girl takes a deep breath and shrugs. "I don't have any other choice. This is the end of the road. I either come in here and I make money, or my family is out on the street. End of story."
"I don't like when need drives young women to my doorstep. If they don't want to dance, then they're not going to be good at it."
"I am good at it, and I can fake enthusiasm just like all the other women you've ever met, believe me." Her voice doesn't shake, which is pretty fucking impressive. Montgomery leans forward across his desk.
"Forgive me for saying so, sweet thing, but you don't look like you got much meat on you."
"Forgive me for saying so, but you're wrong." She unfastens the fur-trimmed coat and lets it drop from her shoulders, revealing a heavily doctored Raleigh High cheerleading outfit. The skirt barely covers the top of her thighs, and the cropped top has been hacked low around the neck, displaying her considerable cleavage. The girl has tits, that's for sure. Montgomery eyes her critically, like he's assessing a horse before buying it, testing to see if it's sound.
"All right, point made," he concedes. "When's your birthday?"
"December 11th, the girl replies.
"Fine. You can dance here, starting tonight, but you don't get naked until December 12th. Understand?"
She nods, covering herself with her coat again.
"And you dance upstairs only. No dancing down in the basement."
"Why, what's in the basement?" Monty squints at her. He's deciding whether or not to tell her the truth, but in the end, he doesn't have much of a choice. If she's gonna dance here at all, she's gonna find out all of the rock's secrets soon enough.
"A club. A kink club. People go down there to fuck. If you're smart, you'll give the place and the customers a wide berth. You stay upstairs on the bar floor, you strip down to your underwear, and then you take whatever tips you make and get out of here. I see so much as a nipple, and you're done. Have I made myself clear?"
"Yes, sir."
"Polite. Good. I like that. What's your name?"
"Halliday, sir."
Monty grunts. "Whenever you walk through the door of this establishment, you're no longer Halliday. You're Billy. Your very first stripper name. Lucky you. Consider yourself christened. Now get the hell out of here before I change my mind."
"Thank you, Mr. Montgomery." Looking a little nervous, Halliday quickly backs out of his office. Monty shoots me a weary look that speaks volumes. He thinks I'm a moron for even bringing her before him, and he's not afraid to show it.
"Keep an eye on her, moron. You vouched for her. She's your responsibility now."
Great. Just what I fucking need. I'm back out on the bar floor, and Halliday, or rather Billy, is set up on the stage when I feel my phone buzz in my back pocket. The text is from a number I don't recognize. 253-441-9678. "Sorry, classes are off. I can't teach you. Harriet's a great trumpet teacher. Best of luck. S."
10. Silver. I was prepared for some fallout after the message I sent to Alex last night, but I'm hardly expecting him to be waiting at the foot of the stairs for me first thing this morning. He's wearing a Billy Joel t-shirt and a face like thunder. I manage a warped smirk as I walk past him into the building. If you think you're going to win me over with a t-shirt, you're sorely mistaken.
What?
The Billy Joel... Never mind. Look, I'm sorry, but I'm in the same boat as you. I don't want any drama either. And if you're going to be rubbing shoulders with the football team, then as far as I'm concerned, you're damaged goods.
Of course I'm damaged goods. What does the football team have to do with it?
He stops short as if he's just pieced together why I hate them so much.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh.
Why didn't you say something?
I screech to a halt, and he nearly walks right into my back. I'm fizzing with the beginnings of anger as I face him. I'm sorry. Do I owe you an explanation for anything I do? Am I indebted to you in some way? His expression is stony. The muscles in his jaw tick like crazy as he flips a set of keys over and over in his hand.
Play nice, Argento. What makes you think I'll be rubbing shoulders with any of those meatheads?
Because that's how things work around here, okay? If you're on the team, you are on the team. I can't help you.
You can't, or you won't?
I won't.
Okay, fine. But I already paid for my first two lessons. You have to get me started at least.
God, the gall of this guy. I've already put the money he gave me in an envelope. I take it out of my jacket pocket and thrust it at him. I was gonna slide this into your locker, but I guess this saves me the trouble. Here, take it back. He doesn't take it back.
That's not how this works. You agreed to two lessons. I'm getting them.
I let my hand fall slack. Jesus, Alex, why is everything so damned difficult with you? Just take the money and leave me alone, okay? I just want to get through this year, graduate, and get the fuck out of here. Please, you're making a scene.
Two lessons. Then I'll be out of your hair, and you won't have to worry about me complicating your plans. I promise.
What does it even matter? Do you think I'm going to change my mind or something? Because I won't. I will out-stubborn you every step of the way, believe me.
Oh, I believe you. Moretti!
The shout rings out across the parking lot. It's Jake. Every single muscle in my body tenses at the sound of his boisterous voice. Alex frowns when he sees my reaction to the guy. A dark, ominous look spreads over him.
Him? He says.
Yeah, him. Now please, just take the money.
I'll see you after school, Argento. Don't stand me up. You won't like what happens if you do.
Alex! Alex! It's too late. He's jogging off down the steps towards Jacob and his crew, and my heart is plummeting in my chest like a lead weight. It feels like it's about to fucking explode when Alex reaches out and accepts Jake's bro handshake like they're suddenly the best of fucking friends. My mouth is hanging open. Horrific timing, really, since Casey and the girls choose right now to saunter up the steps. My ex-best friend sneers as she shoulders her way past me. Catching flies again, Silver? I'd watch out if I were you. One of these guys might find something to slip in there again if you're not careful. The girls all titter like the mindless mannequins that they are. I glare after them, which is the only reason why I catch Halliday looking back over her shoulder, her face the very picture of conflict. At first, I think she's staring at me. But then, I realize with a sick weight pressing down on my chest that she's actually looking at Alex.
11. Alex. Make nice with the kid who hurt Silver, and it costs me dearly. I fucking hated him before I knew what he did to her, but now I want to fucking kill the bastard. Leon's parties are legendary, man, he tells me, throwing his arm around me as we head inside. Half the school's still talking about the last one, and that went down like 9 months ago. His cousin's a DJ in L.A. He always comes up here to play a set. There's plenty of booze, and the girls. He shakes his head laughing. The girls get fucking crazy, man. You're guaranteed to get laid no matter who you are. Last time, I fucked 3 different girls, and they were all hot for it. He spins a sordid, repulsive tale of Leon Wickman's spring fling party that took place last year as I try to make a beeline for history. Unlucky for me, turns out Jake is in my class, so I have to listen to him brag on and on about how some chick was blowing him under a table while he made out with a different girl who had no idea what was happening. There'll definitely be some action for you there, Moretti, if you're into it. My face feels fucking numb. Jacob sits down next to me on the back row. Any of them caught your eye so far? He asks as Mr. Biltmore, a skinny guy with a wispy, half-assed beard, begins scribbling something on the chalkboard at the front of the class. Hmm? I'd ignore Jake if I could, but the motherfucker is persistent. Any of the girls here in school? He presses. You into any of them? God, no. It's cool, it's cool. I know Zen's digging on you. She's one of Casey's friends, gives amazing head, and I heard she let Taylor Elliott stick it in her ass. She'd be a freaky first conquest. Told you I'm not interested. Hey, okay, okay. Didn't mean to stick my nose where it's not wanted. I just felt like I had to say something because, well, I hate to speak badly, but I saw you hanging around that Silver Parisi a couple of times and psh. He widens his eyes, making a crazy face. That one is certifiable, my man. Bitch has mental problems. I press the nib of my pen into the notepad in front of me so hard the plastic buckles and cracks between my fingers. Oh yeah, she's a manipulator. Worse, she's a super bad lay. Take whatever she says with a pinch of salt, dude. If Silver's mouth is moving, then she's fucking lying. She's always been that way. Took a long time for any of us to see it, but now, I'm telling you the truth, man. There isn't a single person at Raleigh stupid enough to look twice at her. All right, open your books to page 58, people. Today we're learning about, you guessed it, the United Nations Treaty Series, one of the most important international docu. Ah, who am I kidding? Mr. Biltmore calls from the front of the class. We're going over the American Civil War again, ladies and gentlemen. Are you pumped for the Battle of Gettysburg or what? His sarcasm goes mostly unnoticed, but I appreciate it. Slowly I turn my head a full 45 degrees to the left until I'm staring coldly at Jacob Weaving's profile. Duly noted, I tell him. Silver's a liar. I'll give her a wide berth. Jake grins at me, an all-American football hero in the making, complete with perfectly white, perfectly straight teeth. Good man, Moretti. Good man. Now are you going to come to Leon's party on Friday or what? My pen cracks again. The entire thing breaks in two. I clench my fist around the broken pieces, enjoying the feel of the sharp edges digging into the flesh of my palm. Sure, why not? Wouldn't miss it for the world. When class ends, Jake thumps the top of my arm, telling me he'll catch me later. And just like that, I'm dismissed. It's a relief. All I can think about is slamming my fist into the fucker's throat. Finding myself free of him is like finding myself free of a persistent and particularly nasty bout of chlamydia. I do not like the dynamic Weaving's trying to cement between us. One where he assumes the role of alpha, with me playing along as the good subordinate. Jacob really has to be the stupidest fucking person I have ever met. Or maybe not. Maybe he really is this sure of himself. Either way, he seems to be missing all the warning signs where I'm concerned. The rap sheet, the tattoos, the motorcycle, the murder in my eyes whenever I look at the piece of shit. I'm gonna go right ahead and blame this one on Instagram. They made guys like me popular. They made it fashionable to look like me, to dress like me, to talk and walk like me. But these insta-famous fuckboys have no idea what the hell they're doing when they pick a gang tattoo from a wall in a hipster den in Seattle and pay to have it driven into their skin. They have no idea what a knife feels like in their hands. They sure as fuck don't know what it feels like to drive that into someone else's skin. In the end, they don't have a clue how to really walk, or talk this talk. The fact that they can buy my style in H&M might have robbed me of my threatening reputation, but that doesn't mean that I am not a threat. I spend the day on the lookout for Silver. She's not an easy person to keep track of, let me tell you. I swear I see the same repeating faces in the hallway over and over again between classes, but not the girl with the haunted look in her eyes. Seems as though she's a ghost from the moment she walks into Raleigh High to the moment she books it out of here. I'm unsurprised to find her noticeably missing in the cafeteria at lunch. I normally leave school grounds and eat at a diner nearby myself, but not today. I'm headed for the exit, about to go in search of something more palatable than cafeteria fare, when I catch sight of the food and realize that it's actually a far cry from the garbage they dished up at Bellingham. Grabbing a loaded tray of food, burger, wedge of lasagna, cup of chocolate pudding, I find an empty table and park myself, ready to hoe in. I'm unimpressed when I sense someone to my right, lowering themselves onto the bench beside me. One single, solitary banana appears on the table next to my tray, and an overpowering smell, saccharine sweet, hits the back of my nose.
Wow, you starved at home or something?
I sigh, annoyance snapping at my back. It's her again, the walking Fenty purse. Zen straddles the bench, facing me, smiling suggestively as she peels her banana and takes a bite. Has this chick never seen a fucking movie? Doesn't she know that she's a walking cliche? Aside from the obnoxious perfume she's doused herself in, she also reeks of desperation. Highly unattractive. She eyes my lunch like it's both the most disgusting and most enticing thing she's ever seen in her life.
Seriously, though, do you live in an orphanage?
She clears her throat and then speaks, affecting a terrible English accent.
Please, huh? May I have some more?
Stupid, ignorant, stuck-up bitch. Oliver, nice. No, I didn't grow up in an orphanage. Zen beams.
Oh, I know. I was only messing around.
They call them homes for boys now. I stayed in one from the age of 6 until I was 11. After that, I bounced around in the foster system for a while. That was fun. The girl looks bewildered. Her mouth falls open wide enough to tell me that she can't figure out if I'm fucking with her or not. I should put her out of her misery, tell her it was a joke. That would be the kind, if dishonest, thing to do, but fuck. I've never been accused of being kind. She shifts awkwardly on the bench, swiveling around to face the table properly.
That sounds like an interesting childhood.
Oh yeah, fucking fascinating. I jam the burger into my mouth, taking a massive bite. Zen watches me, horrified, as I plow through my meal. I don't bother looking up from my tray, even when three other people, two guys and a girl, come and sit with us. Eventually, I surface from my food and lock eyes with Halliday. She gives me a warning glare, nostrils flared, and the look conveys her thoughts perfectly. Please, dear God, do not breathe a single word about what happened last night. Please, please, fucking please. I give her a single raise of my eyebrows, mentally telling her to chill the fuck out. Then I grab my tray and stand.
Hey, dude, what kind of motorcycle is that anyway?
The guy on the left asks. His name is David, or Daniel, or Diego, or something. It's an Indian, a scout.
Huh. My old man says anyone who rides a motorcycle must have a death wish.
I grunt as I leave the table. Yeah, your old man's probably right. It feels like an eternity passes after lunch. I'm torn. I can't wait to get the fuck out of this hellhole, with its clean bathrooms and horribly healthy, wholesome-looking students who smile way too damn much. But I'm also looking forward to staying, too. Because once that bell rings at 2:30, all of these assholes are gonna file out of here, and I'll get to spend an hour with Silver. She's going to follow through on the lesson. She will. I know she will. I'm so confident that she's going to be there when I enter the music room at 2:35 that I'm honestly a little confused when I show up only to find the place deserted. I even check the sound booth cubicles to see if she's waiting for me in there. It takes me a second to really understand that she stood me up. I run my tongue over my teeth, leaving the music room, heading in the direction of the admin office where all the student records are kept. Okay, Silver. It's like that, is it? Well, two can play that game.
12. Silver. Hey, Maxie! For real, dude! Where the hell are your shorts? We're gonna be late! I've already run all over the house, searching for Max's soccer uniform, but the boy loses everything he touches, and thus far, he's been more interested in Call of Duty than helping me hunt down his shit. I'm not even supposed to be taking him to practice tonight, but Dad managed to talk me into it. Uninterrupted time for him to continue working on his piece for the Architect's Digest. In exchange, he promised I could have the keys to the cabin this weekend, since it's Labor Day on Monday. Plus, a full tank of gas so I can drive myself up to the lake. The thought of being up there alone with only my guitar and my books for company? 72 blissful hours of solitude? Yeah, It's gonna be heaven on earth. Of course, Dad has no idea I'll be going up there alone. I didn't lie to him, per se. Okay, well, it's potentially a lie by omission, but it's hardly my fault if he doesn't do his due diligence. For the past 2 years, I've been allowed to use the cabin at the lake because the girls always used to come with me. A group of 5 girls, together in the woods, armed with pepper spray, made it possible for my parents to sign off on unsupervised trips to the tiny log cabin my grandfather built on the shore of Lake Cushman back in the 60s. Since last spring, I've been going there by myself, though, and neither Mom or Dad have bothered to ask if any of my friends were going with me. They've assumed, which is to say, they've been too wrapped up in their own separate shit to adequately parent their only daughter. For once, their total lack of interest in my life has worked out in my favor. Max, I swear to God, I will burn your PlayStation if you don't give me some sort of clue here, bud. Downstairs, there's a loud crash, followed by a thud, and then the sound of footsteps hammering up the stairs. My brother bursts into his room, where I'm ankle deep in the clothes that have been dumped on his bedroom floor. His cheeks are flushed, eyes flashing with irritation. Like most 11-year-old boys, Max takes threats to his PlayStation very seriously. I don't even care about soccer anymore. I basically told Dad I wasn't going to go, so you might as well stop. Well, Dad basically told me you basically had to go. So find your shorts. If you're not in the car in 5 minutes, there'll be consequences. Growling like a little fucking savage, Max begins to kick through his clothes in search of his elusive soccer shorts. I grab my bag and head downstairs, trying to decide which book to read while I wait for Max's practice to be over. I don't blame the kid for not wanting to go. It's raining again, layers of mist skating through the tops of the trees that cover the mountainside opposite the house, and the cold feels like it's seeping into my bones. I'll be safe and dry in the car, but Maxie will be soaked to the skin and covered in mud in less than 5 minutes flat. Which reminds me, I'm taking the van, Dad.
Can't you take him in your car? He calls from his office.
No dice, hombre. Last time I did that, it took a week to get the dirt out of the seats. Pretty sure it's all still ground into the carpet, too. I'm not dealing with that again.
Come on, Syl. I don't have time to clean the van.
I appreciate that, but you're an adult with a 6-figure salary. You can afford to have someone detail it for you. See you in an hour. I snatch up his keys, ignoring the sound of his grumbling coming from underneath his office door, and I go wait in the van for Max. I'm getting ready to lean on the horn when he comes running out of the house, red-cheeked, but dressed in his full kit, soccer cleats and all. He slams the car door behind him and slumps down into his seat, arms folded across his chest. I need your cell phone, he informs me. I throw the van into reverse and clear the drive. Why? I was supposed to hang out with Colton and Jamie in the game. I need to let them know I've been kidnapped. For all their faults, my parents have stuck to their guns on this one thing. Max doesn't get a cell phone until high school. I had to live by the same rule, so I sympathize with him. The little monster has memorized all of his friends' numbers, though, and he constantly has his hand out for my phone. Beyond annoying. If I don't give it to him, the next hour is going to be brutal. I opt for the quickest, easiest route to a peaceful life, and I hand it over. He begins typing furiously. Mom was crying this morning, he says. What? What do you mean she was crying? I heard her in the shower. The sky is darkening. I haven't bothered to turn any music on, so there's nothing to obscure the deep, low rumble of thunder that rolls in the distance. I'm sure she wasn't crying, Max. She might have been humming or something. It's tough to tell what's going on when the water's running. Silver, I'm 11, not a moron. I know what it sounds like when someone's crying. She was crying just like when Grandpa died. When our grandfather died 3 years ago, Mom didn't just cry. She sobbed inconsolably, and the sound of her pain stole the very last fragments of my innocence. I'd never seen such agony on anyone's face or heard it in that way before, and I knew for a fact that I was witnessing the lowest, most harrowing moment of my mother's life as she lay in the fetal position, collapsed on the hallway floor, clutching the phone to her chest. If she was crying like that in the shower, then... No, there's just no way. I would have heard her. And besides, something monumentally bad would have had to have happened to make her that distraught. Dad would have pulled me aside and given me a heads up, even if Mom had tried to hide it from me. could have been a video, Bud, or maybe a song. Max huffs, stabbing at the phone screen ever faster. Whatever you say. He hates not being believed. It's his thing, his trigger, the one thing that makes him snap and act like he's fucking possessed. Mom always said we should never discount or dismiss him out of hand, and that sometimes it's best to just humor him. I'm about to do just that when I hear the shooping sound of his message being sent. Who's Alex? He asks. What? Alex, you got a message from him. I nearly swerve the car off the road. Give me the phone. Give it to me, Max. Don't freak out. He just said he was going to hang at the house with Dad until we get back. Did you forget he was coming over? Oh my God. Oh my fucking God. Nope. No, 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 no. My vision's blurring. Holy shit, my vision is blurring. I can't fucking see. Windshield wiper sill, Max says. Oh, the rain's worsened. I'm not going blind from sheer panic after all. I turn the windshield wipers on, and they beat frantically across the glass, sweeping a river of water aside as I pull into the parking lot of Max's soccer club. I throw the van into park and snatch my phone from my brother, my hands shaking as I read the message lit up on the screen. Alex. Just missed you. Ready and waiting for our lesson. Your dad seems cool. Very interested in my ride. We're gonna hang in the garage until you get back. Fuck me fucking sideways. Fuck! What the hell is happening right now? How in the name of Celine Dion has this come about? Alex is there? At the house? He's with my dad and they're hanging out in the fucking garage? Dad hasn't stepped foot in the garage for years. I can only imagine what he's thinking right now. I can barely feel my fingers as I type out a message to him and fire it off, utterly dismayed. Me. Sorry, Dad. You can tell Alex to leave. I canceled our lesson. He must have forgotten. Ha. Forgotten. More like he got pissed that I refused to bow down to his demands, and now he's trying to fuck with me. I can picture the scene all too freaking well. Alex leaning up against Dad's rusty workbench, hands in his pockets, sexy as hell with his ridiculous smile and his ridiculous eyes, and a cold knot of fear begins to form in my stomach. What the hell are they even talking about right now? Alex and I have barely spoken ourselves, and our stilted conversations have revolved heavily around the fact that I was sexually assaulted. He wouldn't bring that up to my dad. He wouldn't. Would he? Sweet fucking Jesus. We can just go back if you want, Max says. It's freezing. At this point, it's safe to say neither of us wants to be here. I sit very still, considering that option for a second. Should we go back? Every part of me is screaming at me to burn rubber back home and roll out the damage control. But there's also a part of me that's railing against that option. If I go running back there, panicked and freaking out, I'm giving Alex precisely what he wants. I'll be reacting the way he's undoubtedly expecting me to react. And I don't want to give him that satisfaction. It'd mean he won, and Alex Moretti is never going to fucking win with me. I will sit here in the car, and I will make Max play in the rain if it means I get to be the stronger person. Sorry, Maxie. If your coach still thinks you guys can play, then I do too. Out you go. Disappointed, he shoots me a betrayed grimace as he opens the car door and steps out into the wild weather. Before he slams the door closed behind him, in his most serious tone, he says, If I die of pneumonia, it'll be your fault. I will haunt you, Silver, and I'll be really good at it, too. You'll be so scared, you'll probably choke on your own tongue and die. The threat's kind of endearing, really. I'm not really worried about it, since it seems I'm being haunted by a real-life living monster now anyway, and he's dead set on ruining my entire fucking life. Once Max is gone, I open up the message Alex sent and tap out a reply. Me. If you think this is cute, you're sorely mistaken. Do not say anything weird to my dad. About anything. Max's coach must be a hard ass because he makes the kids play even when the rain is hammering on the roof of the van like a drum. I sit in the driver's seat, unable to do anything but nervously sweat and dig my fingernail into the cord to my headphones, until I've stripped the plastic from the copper wires inside, and I've ruined them beyond repair. Max groans and shivers all the way home, smearing mud and mangled blades of grass all over the place. My pulse rises at an alarmingly rapid rate when I pull into our driveway, bracing myself for the scene I'm about to stumble across in the garage. But the door is up, the lights are on, and there's no one there. I was kind of hoping Alex would get bored, realize he'd made his point, and leave. But his motorcycle's still sitting in the drive, so looks like I'm shit out of luck there. That can mean only one thing. Alex Moretti has made it inside my house. 13. Silver.
Cut the shit. You're lying.
My heart bottoms out at the hard edge to my father's voice.
There is absolutely no way.
I nearly trip over my own feet as I hurry into the kitchen, my pulse thumping urgently in all of my extremities. I feel like I'm going to pass the fuck out. When I throw myself through the doorway, miracle upon miracles, Dad's hand isn't wrapped around Alex's throat. I barely know what to do with myself as Alex, leaning up against the fridge, perfectly at home, like he's been here 1,000 times before, looks over at me and winks. The majority of his ink is hidden by his long-sleeved shirt, but the intricately woven design, looks like vines and thorns, sprawling up the right-hand side of his neck, is still very visible, as are the backs of his hands. There's just no hiding that ink. Not that Alex looks even remotely fazed by the fact that his artwork is on show.
Silver!
Dad grins over his shoulder when he notices me standing behind him.
Sorry, honey, I only just got your message. Your friend Alex here has been telling me that he met Paul Ryder from Denver Blues at a concert last year. Remember your mom and I went to see Denver Blues play last year too? I would have lost my cool if I'd gotten to shake Paul's hand. Silver isn't such a huge fan. I don't know what I did to deserve a daughter that doesn't appreciate good music.
At any other time, I'd never let a sly dig like that from Dad fly. But I barely even hear it today. I'm far too busy boring holes into the side of Alex's head. What are you doing here, Alex? I try and keep my voice steady, but my anxiety is tussling with my anger, and the battle between the two warring emotions is making it difficult to feign calm.
We had an agreement. I paid for 2 lessons. We agreed we'd have the first today after school.
Do not make a scene in front of Dad. Do not make a scene in front of Dad. I'm prickling all over. Pretty sure there's a vein pulsing in my temple, too. I told you I couldn't fit you into my schedule. I have too much going on at the moment. I tried to give you back your money this morning, remember? Dad takes a long pull from the bottle of beer he's holding.
Thought you were trying to save up for a new paint job for the Nova Sill. Now you're turning down cash? And come on, you're hardly busy. You spend most of your time moping around the place with your nose buried in a book.
I smile at him grimly, lips pressed into an unimpressed line. And I thought I had to take Max to practice because you had work you needed to do. Now you're talking music, drinking beer, and kicking back with an absolute stranger? Dad laughs.
Huh, just trying to get to know your friends, honey. And if you're gonna be riding around on the back of a motorcycle, I figured there was no harm in meeting the guy who'd be operating it.
Dad, I'm not going to be riding around on the back of a motorcycle. Alex and I don't even really know each other. Dad doesn't bother to hide his amused disbelief.
All right, kiddo. Whatever you say. Well, Alex, it was nice to meet you. I hope you guys have a nice lesson. I cleared out some space for you in the garage. Don't make too much noise, though. Your mom will kill me if the neighbors start complaining.
The garage is cold with the door open, but ain't no way I'm closing it. I do not want to be trapped inside a secluded space with any boy, let alone one who thinks it's okay to fuck with me like this. Sitting on the edge of Dad's ancient pool table, I'm livid as I set up the spare guitar I use for teaching, resting the waist of the instrument against the top of my leg, twisting each turning peg in turn, and then strumming, listening for a moment when I bend the sound to find the perfect note. Alex watches me, arms across his chest, his head a little dipped, his dark eyes unreadable. In my mind, 1,000 burning insults present themselves to me like weapons, each one begging to be thrown, hurled, or thrust. But instead, I keep a leash on my temper, quickly working to prep for this damned lesson. The sooner we can get started, the sooner I can put an end to this nonsense and get this over with.
Silver.
The rain thunders down onto the flat roof of the garage, rushing down the drain pipes, tinging against the copper wind chimes hanging from the eaves by the front door. But Alex's voice is so clear, as if his mouth is pressed against the shell of my ear and the exhale of his breath is all I'm capable of hearing. The expression I set on my face as I raise my gaze to meet his is less than friendly. What?
I'm nobody's bitch, okay? If you think I'd ever bow down to weaving, then you've got me all wrong.
I slide off the edge of the pool table and shove the guitar into Alex's chest. I don't care what you do.
Sure you do.
Nope. I unfasten the catches on my hard guitar case, taking out my own instrument. I just played it this morning, but it's habitual. I still check to make sure every string is perfectly in tune. Alex pulls up Dad's rolling stool, taking a seat on it and resting the guitar I've given to him on his knee. A bright flash of lightning flickers in the sky over Hunter Mountain, briefly illuminating the heavy, swollen clouds. The world beyond the mouth of the garage is the color of iron, seething purples and flashes of silver as the snap of electricity turns all of the puddles to molten lead. As if by some unspoken agreement, Alex and I wait for the thunder. Neither of us breaks the silence until the booming crash of sound shakes both the sky and the ground beneath our feet. We are starting from the very beginning, I say in a professional tone, my teaching voice. The anatomy of a guitar. I spin my guitar around in my hands so that its base is resting on top of my legs. This is the headstock. I point to the top of the guitar, where the tuning pegs attach to the strings. These are the fingerboards. These steel bands are the frets. You change the tone and key of whatever you're playing by...
You care more than you're willing to admit, Alex says.
I look up from the guitar. If you're not going to pay attention to even the most basic part of this lesson, then you're not going to learn anything.
You watch me, Silver. I feel your eyes on me all the time. You think I didn't know you were there on the football field, sitting underneath the bleachers?
My usual reaction would be instantaneous embarrassment, but not this time. He crossed a line coming here. I don't have to be anything other than angry. What do you want me to say? When a car is hurtling toward the edge of a cliff and you know it's about to crash through the safety barrier and explode in a fiery ball of flames on the rocks below, it's impossible to look away, Alex.
It wasn't just yesterday, though, was it? You've been keeping an eye on me for the past 2 weeks.
You'd only know that if you'd been watching me, I snap back. He smirks, hair tousled, skin pale, eyes as dark as sin. His mouth twitches as he breathes steadily down his nose.
I have a brother, a little brother. He's in care right now. I want to be his legal guardian when I turn 18, but I need to impress the crap out of Darhauer first. I'm asking for your help.
So, there is a reason behind this. I knew there had to be, but I didn't expect it to be this. He has a little brother, and he wants to take care of him. I can't picture it. Not for a second. Alex doesn't exactly give off the responsible, stand-in father kind of vibe.
I have 7 months to get my shit together. If you sign off on my lesson sheet twice a week, that'd be a huge step in the right direction.
I laugh, massaging the pads of my fingers into my forehead. Seems I've developed a bastard of a headache all of a sudden. Sign off on the lessons? Say you've done them when you actually haven't? Right, so you want me to lie for you. What are you going to do when you have to sit the end-of-year music exam, genius? A secret, amused smile makes it all the way to the corners of his eyes.
You don't need to worry about that. I've got it handled.
This is some fucking bullshit, Alex. If he doesn't register the frustration and annoyance in my voice, then he's mentally fucking compromised. He's been wasting my time, playing some sort of weird game with me ever since he decided to climb into my car, and I don't know why. Whatever his reasoning, I'm sick of it. Another round of thunder growls in the distance. Fine, just go. I'll sign off on your lessons, whatever you want me to do. Let's just minimize contact as much as possible. I'm not willing to make my life any harder than it already is. He stares at me, unblinking. His eyes run me through like dark blades.
I think you'll change your mind about that one, Silver.
Exasperated, I get up, hurriedly putting away my guitar. My fingers find the catches on my hard case, but it takes 3 attempts to close them. I don't understand what your game plan is here, but you're not making any sense. You stood there in the bathrooms the other day and told me in no uncertain terms that you weren't interested in me. But By the way you're talking now, it sure as hell doesn't sound that way. I continue to fluster, snatching the other guitar from him and sliding into the gig bag, zipping it up in quick, angry movements.
How does it sound to you, Silver?
The timbre of his voice mimics the thunder, gravel, rough, deep enough to make me quake. Rounding on him, my chest rising and falling way too quickly, I ball my hands into fists, fighting the urge to scream. Like you realized it might be fun to try and mess with me. Like you saw a broken, vulnerable person just trying to get through her last shitty, miserable days of high school, and you thought to yourself, graduation's a long way off, Alex. Maybe you should toy with that girl as a source of entertainment to stem your own selfish fucking boredom. He stands perfectly still, frozen in place. The only small movement he makes is that of his shoulders rising slowly. As always, he appears annoyingly unaffected by what I've just said to him. His gaze is as hard as ever, impenetrable and distant. For one insane, awful moment, I think I'm actually going to pick up one of Dad's barely used tools and smash him over the head with it. That would be satisfying, at least, and I'd feel a little relieved for a moment before the remorse kicked in. You think you're so fucking clever, don't you? I snap. Nothing touches you. Nothing reaches you.
I'm what?
You're a void, Alex. A vast, beautiful fucking black hole that sucks everything into it and gives nothing back. Ever. Even the goddamn daylight can't escape you. A dark cloud follows you wherever you go. It's impossible to miss. You see everything. You judge everyone. You think you know everything. And underneath all of that, you feel nothing. For the very first time, a small flicker of emotion flashes over his features. I haven't angered him, though. His composure doesn't falter even for a heartbeat. He simply looks confused. With careful, measured, even steps, he moves towards me, and a kernel of fear begins to take root inside me. What the hell is he going to do?
I have a temper, he grinds out. A bad one. I had to master it a long time ago. Otherwise, it was going to master me. So yeah, I'm not exactly the most reactive person you'll ever meet. But that doesn't mean there's nothing going on in here, he says, tapping the side of his head. I'm not aloof. I'm not cold. I'm not distant. I'm learning. And I feel everything, Silver.
He pauses, an unfamiliar edge of uncertainty smoldering in his eyes. It looks like he's battling with himself over what he should say next. He speaks quickly then, rushing the words out, as if he wants to expel them from his body before he can change his mind.
You're right. I told you that you were a means to an end in the bathroom, that I wasn't interested in you, and that wasn't true. I am not trying to use you as a source of entertainment, though. I'm trying to figure you out. I'm intrigued by you.
Why the hell would I intrigue you, for Christ's sake? He doesn't miss a beat.
Because you're still standing. Because after everything you went through, you didn't fucking break.
He's so close to me now, closer than he's ever been before. I'm unsteady on my feet, and my heart is riding against my ribs, as though it's trying to break free from its cage and flee the scene of a crime.
Strength is drawn to strength, Silver. And I think there's a chance that you might be the strongest person I have ever met.
His warm breath skates over my collarbone, and the shiver that follows doesn't just slide over my skin. It sinks deep down into the marrow of my bones. With excruciatingly slow movements, Alex reaches out a tentative hand and takes hold of the curl of hair that's fallen free from my sloppy ponytail. He gently winds it around the end of his finger, pupils blown, his lips parted, fixated on his finger and my hair that's wrapped around it. He whispers the words that follow.
It isn't just that. I also happen to think that you're the most beautiful fucking thing I have ever witnessed with my own two eyes. I am watching you, just as much as you're watching me. And I don't trust myself to look away.
Holy shit. I am 17 years old. The world is changing around me so rapidly that I worry I might never find my place in it. Just a few short years ago, I was so sure of everything. I loved boy bands and horses, drawing and playing my guitar. Then, almost overnight, nothing was certain anymore, and things I thought I knew to be true no longer were. It was as though I was a caterpillar, happy, learning, and growing, and then without warning, I began to transform into something else. There has been no chrysalis, though. No cocoon to hide away inside, safe until I'm ready to reemerge into the world, new and fresh and complete. No. All of my transformations have taken place out in the open, in public, for all to see. And the process has been horrific. In the past year alone, I've had to endure more trauma and heartache than most people are asked to endure in their entire lifetimes. Something precious was taken from me, ripped away, stolen with greedy hands and whiskey-soaked breath, and I felt it inside me. That bottomless, dark chasm that swallowed any hope of me ever having a normal teenage life. I've believed, since the moment I rolled over onto my side on the bathroom floor of Leon Wickman's father's bathroom, with my insides all torn up, blood making the insides of my thighs sticky, the smell of copper hanging heavy in the air, that I would never be capable of feeling affection for a guy ever again. And yet, here I am, 17 years old, unbroken. And the way Alex Moretti is looking at me now has kindled something in the hollow of my chest that I thought had perished. Alex swallows, his eyes on fire, and I can read his intentions on his face. He's going to kiss me. He's going to press his mouth on mine, and he's going to bury his hands into my hair, and he's going to steal my breath and my heart and the tattered remnants of my fragile soul. And I'm going to let him, because I'm intrigued by him too, and get out. I hate the words even as I whisper them, but I can't. I can't fucking do this. Alex's eyes, half lowered, open wide at the command. He immediately takes a step back. Next thing I know, he's sliding on his leather jacket, which has been sitting on Dad's workbench this entire time, and he's leaving the garage. He swings his leg over his motorcycle and then sits for a second, staring at me.
I'm not going to force you to fall for me, Silver. You've already been forced to do too much. But don't blame me if I try and change your mind.
You've got more chance of pulling down the moon. My throat throbs, aching against the words, but they're the truth. Alex turns the key in the ignition, and the motorcycle's engine roars to life. The single beam of its headlight feels like a tractor beam, pulling me toward him, tugging at the very cells of my body. But I stay absolutely still as he backs down the driveway, out onto the street, and rides off into the rain.
14. Alex. Another shift at the Rock. Halliday doesn't show, which is a relief. I don't want to deal with anyone from Raleigh right now. Least of all a member of Casey Winter's Sirens. Montgomery has me make a run for him just before midnight. I hand off the bag and accept the envelope, all without looking up at the person I'm making the deal with. I don't want any faces sticking in my memory, and this has never felt good to me. I don't know what's in the bag, but it's probably drugs. Coke, maybe. Hopefully not meth or heroin. I don't like the idea of being Monty's mule, any more than I like the idea of losing out on the cash if I tell him I won't do it anymore. So I try and get the job done as quickly and painlessly as possible. Monty gives me a six-pack and my own little envelope containing our agreed-upon amount. Once my shift's over and I'm back at the trailer, the green neon digits of the alarm clock next to the TV reading 2:23 in the morning, I squirrel the envelope away in the box behind the water heater. Then I drink the six-pack in silence, staring at the static on the television screen, thinking about Silver. The oversized t-shirts she wears are a shield, a defense. She uses all that extra fabric to hide her body from hungry eyes. I should know. I couldn't take mine off her when I saw her in that black lacy number she was sporting yesterday. She wore that for me, to impress me. To catch my attention. And when she got it, she was afraid. She was afraid of me, which is not okay. I'm a piece of shit, sure. I've done plenty of things I'm not proud of. I still do things I'm not proud of on a regular basis, running Monty's deliveries being a prime example. But I have never, ever hurt a girl. I've never laid my hands on a girl unless she's begged me to do it, and then it's only been to bring her pleasure. I've never encouraged a chick to do anything she didn't want to do. Damn it, I don't even disrespect women when I open my fucking mouth. Silver doesn't know this. She doesn't know me. so her reluctance to give me a shot is understandable. I fall asleep on the couch, nothing new there, and my neck's killing me when I wake up. I shower while the coffee's brewing, hurrying because I don't want to miss Silver before she disappears through Raleigh's doors and manages to give me the slip for the rest of the day. But when I open the trailer door, it's fucking raining so hard I can barely see 3 feet in front of my own face. No way I can ride to Raleigh in this. I'm going to have to drive the old Camaro, and it's been so long since I've even started the engine, it's bound to be fucking dead. When I throw my ass inside the car, slide the key into the ignition, and turn it over, I'm met with the straining sounds of one very unhappy combustion engine. It stutters, catches, almost strengthens, and then dies. Fuck. I hate it when I'm right. I've been fixing cars since I was old enough to hold a wrench, so it doesn't take long to hook the Camaro up to the neighbor's car and zap some life into the old girl. It does mean the bell's already rung by the time I jog inside the school building, and Silver's nowhere to be seen, though. I think about missing homeroom altogether and just waiting for her outside her room. I need to have my attendance marked even if I am late, though. Otherwise, Rhonda and Maeve are gonna shit themselves, and I can't be fucked dealing with that right now. Besides, hunting Silver down and lurking in the hallway until she appears is pretty fucking close to stalking, and I doubt that will help. At lunch, Jake informs me that my presence is required after school for my first training session with the team, even though the schedule Coach Quentin gave me doesn't have me down until next week. All good though, man. We're all going to be on a massive high from Leon's party, and no extra sit-ups or push-ups required to make our shirts look good. Plus, that first beer is going to taste so fucking good if we've earned it on the field. I really fucking hate the way he throws his arm around my shoulder and grins at me, laughing like a hyena. But I allow it. Jacob needs to believe I'm towing the line with him for more than one reason. I'm still working out the details, but there will come a day when Jakey Boy's crown slips, and I'll make sure the whole school is on hand to witness it. His fall from grace will make Silver's descent look like she tripped and landed on the world's most comfortable feather mattress. Training's brutal. My lungs are scorched and my legs are on fire before we're even halfway through warm-ups. But I hide it well. Can't let these motherfuckers think for 1 second that I can't keep up. I can, and I do. But I also make a personal note to start running every morning. My cardio could be better. Jacob's as subtle as a sledgehammer to the head as he whispers into his buddy's ears, encouraging them to put me through my paces. I'm tripped, punched in the back, and bombarded with a series of late hits that Coach Quentin ignores with a level of skill that I find pretty damn impressive. I was expecting this kind of shit, though. I'm the new guy. This probably won't be the last training session I walk away from covered in bruises, and it won't be the last time my new teammates give me the rough treatment. In their eyes, I'll need to prove myself, make them trust me. And I've decided that maybe I do want them to trust me, too.
Stai attento, mi amor. Stai attento,